Dave showed up last week, so.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's recording.
So I think he's gonna come in. Okay.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to call the November 19th Pension Committee meeting to order. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the August 21st, 2014 minutes. Are there any questions or concerns about those minutes? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. The items on the agenda are basically Pierce Parks items, so he's here to speak. So the first item is the performance report of the pension and OPEB funds. Mr. Schoen?
Okay, thank you. And yes, brought a lot of paperwork today here, but there are quite a few things we were charged to look at, so we will go over. I'll go over the performance report for both the pension and the OPEB. We'll also talk about the potential search for replacement for Fidelity, the overall OPEB structure, and then the consulting plus component. So, okay. Overview on the, if you go to the first tab on the economy, if you go to page one, you'll see in the upper right-hand chart, it's a real GDP growth. That's inflation-adjusted GDP growth. The gold line is the one I would focus more on. That's the year-over-year. You can see it, GDP growth since second quarter 2012 has been in this 2 to 3% range, which is not robust growth, but it's been pretty steady growth. We have seen unemployment rates continue to come down. The last reported one, I think, was at 5.8%. And we've continued to see the equity markets doing very, very well. You know, even with the blip that we had in October and earlier in the year, the markets are up, you know, not as strong as last year, but rarely are they as strong as last year. But they continue to do well. So we'll see how long that continues, but that's, you know, very good for the plan. On the other hand, you'll see the German, and the U.S. continues to be really the economic driver of the world. Even though you hear all the other things out there, and you know, we are really the driver out there, and most of the rest of the world actually is slowing up. Some countries going, some regions going into recession. And you can see in the chart below that the German business surveys, and Germany really is the economic driver of Europe. But you can see over the last couple months, it's on the far right-hand side, the downturn, both their business expectations and the current business climate, a downturn that they're expecting a slowdown in their economy. We're seeing that throughout the rest of Europe, and I say the rest of the world. And this will play out in a moment when we talk about international equities and what impact that has on you. And one of the reasons why, and I'll jump ahead, but I shared this with Gina, that your plan ranked in the top 1% for the last year of all the funds in our, and it's a national database of over 200 pension funds. So, and the OPEB fund actually was in the top like 6% for the quarter. So that's made some very nice progression. We'll talk about why these things have occurred. Obviously, it's nice bragging rights while you have them, you know? You don't want to brag too hard because you never know when the worm will turn, but it's nice to, you know, very nice to see that. If you go down to page two, you see in the lower right-hand side the 10-year government bond yields. And you see the blue squiggly line, that's the U.S. And that's our 10-year government bond yields have stayed pretty steady for the last roughly year and a half. Okay? It's gone down a little bit, but pretty steady. Where you see is the gold, the orange, the sort of maroonish color, which are all European, you know, France, Germany, and Netherlands. Their interest rates on their bonds, government bonds, have gone down very precipitously over the last year. And that's by government design. They're starting to do what we did many years ago, where we drove down our interest rates with the hope to stimulate the economy. It took a while for that to occur, but, you know, we saw eventually, you know, home building started to increase. You've seen that, you know, very, very much so in Sussex County. We've seen, you know, borrowing for other purposes increase, and that's one of the tools used to try to get yourself out of a deep recession, is what we're in. Europe didn't go that approach, and, you know, they found out that they feel they need to do that now. Now, what does that mean from an investment perspective? If the yields on their bonds, and their inflation is about the same as ours, so if our yields are a lot higher than theirs, and therefore our real yields, net of inflation, are higher than theirs, then investors are going to move their money from elsewhere to ours. We're still considered a place of, you know, greatest security. So whenever there's time of real economic difficulties, money flows into the U.S. But it's especially going to flow in when the return they can get here is better than they can get overseas. Now, what does that mean? Because there's more demand, you know, money flowing here, the dollar appreciates relative to other currencies. The dollar is stronger. So earnings overseas, okay, when brought back into the U.S., meaning investing in companies that are domiciled elsewhere, those go down by the value of the currency exchange rates, okay? So taking out all factored in, with a slowing economy elsewhere, and therefore their earnings growth aren't as good, and the dollar being stronger, that means U.S. investing has been much stronger than the international investing for the last, really, it's really been the last several years, but especially this year, okay? Because you have a lower allocation to international equities and other plans, okay? Other plans of similar size, similar type, on a peer group basis, it's one of the reasons why you had such a good year. Now, there's a number of other reasons also, but, okay? Going on to page 3, you'll see in the blue bar is the year-to-date, the gray is the quarter-to-date. This is through September, okay? Because I'll give you a moment through the end of yesterday. Year-to-date, the U.S. equities are up 7%. Quarter was flat. But international equities were down 5.9 for the quarter and down 1.4. And the emerging market equities, which are international non-developed countries, was down 3.5 and up 2.4. So big disparity between investing in U.S. and non-U.S. And then, actually, I just had this sent to me by my office just to give you some idea, because the markets have been so volatile so far this quarter. The first two weeks of this quarter, the equity markets were down very strongly. They came back up in October, okay, and we get in here, we've given you up through in October, but so much has happened since then. But to give you some idea, quarter to date, and I don't have it for the total fund for you, but for the individual funds, to give you some idea, Washington Mutual up 3.1, your index fund up 4.3, Eaton Vance up 7.9, Target up 5.5, Thornburg up 4.4. So I'll say very unexpected, but very pleasant to have those kinds of returns on the equity markets, which you're going to need to have because bonds, as we've talked about on many occasions, can expect, you know, 2.5, at best 3% returns over the next 5 to 10 years, we believe, yeah, at best, okay? You go down page 4, you can see it made a big difference whether you were more in large and mid-cap or in small cap this year. Large and mid-cap, you can see all the bars are off to the right, meaning, you know, positive returns. Small cap stocks, negative for the quarter, very negative for the quarter. Although they've bounced back this quarter, they're having a nice quarter this quarter. And this is, you know, if you look, go back the year before and the year before, that small cap was a big winner. It's why you have this disciplined process on the OPEB fund to rebalance your portfolios, to bring them back to their targets. Because we don't really know, nobody really knows, is today a day small cap's going to do better, or is it large cap? You know, you stick with that discipline. What benefited you also on the pension side is, and this, when we get to Fidelity, we'll talk about this, you have what the state does. That's really set aside. You have no discretionary control over what they do there, okay? Fortunately, they've been more allocated to equities this year. They're about 70% equities. Even though your target for your overall plan is 60, they're at 70. Equities have outperformed fixed income, so that's been beneficial. And what you do, you have both DuPont Capital, who's managing large cap stocks for you. Fidelity, even though they benchmark themselves to the Russell 2000, which is small cap, when you really look at them, they're really a mid-cap manager. They're not a small cap manager. But that has actually become beneficial to you this year because you're light on small cap because of that. Okay? So that's another reason why you see this strong peer group performance. Go down to page 5, international equities. I'm going to say there was no place to hide. You can see the blue bars for the quarter are all to the left-hand side, and most of the gray bars are either negative for the year or just slightly positive. So it didn't make a big difference whether in just Europe, excluding UK, that means excluding, you know, United Kingdom, Pacific, ex-Japan, UK, Japan, emerging markets, all of them were significantly less than the U.S., and most of them, all of them for the quarter were negative, okay? And then the chart below just reinforces what I was mentioning about the currency. All the other times I come in here, you'll see some bars to the right of zero, some to the left of the zero. If it's to the right of zero, that means that currency has appreciated relative to the dollar. If it's to the left, it's depreciated relative to the dollar. You can see all those currencies have strong depreciation relative to the dollar. So what does that mean? As I say, first and foremost, from investing, then that's going to lower the return on the international side because of the currency effect. You take your earnings and then you're going to devalue them relative to the currency exchange rate change in that quarter. Okay. Secondly, if from an inflation perspective, it's actually good for inflation for us because if our dollar's stronger and their goods are less expensive, the goods that we're buying from overseas are going to be less expensive. So from an inflation perspective, that's a positive. The potential negatives, though, are, okay, so over time, what will happen is that as goods overseas become less and less expensive relative to ours, there'll be more buying of goods from overseas, okay? Now, that might be good because it increases the return on your international investments, but it also means from U.S. companies, they're going to be less attractive in the marketplace. In the short term, they'll be more attractive because it takes a while for people to change their buying consumption. They've got more power there. But longer term, that could be a bit of a drag on the U.S., you know, and that's why you might hear sometimes, like, especially China always keeps devaluing their currency to make their goods more, you know, attractive from a, you know, pricing perspective. Okay, and on page 6, you can see U.S. Treasury yields, they haven't changed a whole lot in the last year, you know, in the last quarter. Very upward sloping yield curve. But in that you're in that short to intermediate range, you can see, you know, yields 2-2.5%. In fact, the yields on the intermediate government credit index now are down to 1.5%. So the positive for this year from an investment perspective is that interest rates came down some, so you not only got the yield, but you got some capital appreciation. The negative going forward is now that yields are even lower, the expectations for the next 5 to 10 years on bonds are even less than they were when we start talking at the beginning of the year. It does get to that question of return expectations, and do you start looking at maybe, although 60% equities has worked very well for you, do you think about maybe moving that up a little bit? Because it's going to be very, very difficult to meet 7.5% for the next 5 to 10 years. Okay, I keep saying this each quarter, the markets keep doing well, but you know, I do think that in time that'll occur. So page 11, okay, market value as of the end of September was $70.2 million. Don't have an updated value on that. Third, other than I can tell you it's up from there, but I don't know what that number is. Because the state, we only get information, you know, once a month from them. Third quarter, you had a net loss of $109,000. Year-to-date, a gain of $4.27 million. Third quarter returns down 0.2. That's a net return. Even though it says gross, that's a mistake there. I was reading through it last night and I checked that, and it's just, that should say net return. Your gross return was down 0.1%. Okay, the net just being the investment management fees. And the 6.1, that is net. Okay, gross was 6.3. Very strong peer group rankings, and you outperformed your policy index by almost 3% over the past year. That is a huge outperformance. I don't think in all the years I've done this for any of my clients, I've seen that level of outperformance relative to the benchmark. Okay, and all the managers did very well. It wasn't just one piece of that. Okay, you added Vanguard Extended Market last quarter, and you took half the money away from Fidelity Asset. Okay, looking ahead, just, and we've talked about this before, GASB 67, 68, you're in throes of having to deal with those issues, and it'll be an ongoing, you know, thing to work through with your auditors, actuaries, and ourselves. And look at, you know, you asked us to look at a replacement for the other half of Fidelity, a low-price stock. 13 just shows you the cash flows. I'll take you all the way out on the 2 years. You'll see investment earnings has been $14.9 million. You started at $55 million 2 years ago. You might ask, well, if we've been giving consulting further out in time, why don't we have more years? It's because we don't have all the data. We weren't keeping the cash flow data past more than 2 years. So we'll keep building this out over time, and we'll use a different service. So, but I have gone back to Terrence and said, you know, is there some way we can get some further out in there? But at least you'll have 2 years, and then, you know, over time you'll have three and four, et cetera. Okay? Page 15. And if you have any questions, stop me, but I, you know, I'd like to cover here. 15, you'll see your asset allocation has stayed quite consistent, and that's by your intent. You have a target asset allocation mix of 60-40. You don't have control over what the state did. The state is up to 70% equities right now, so your overall asset allocation is probably more, a little bit above 65% right now. But they may also at some time go down to 50%. They will do a fairly wide level of tactical asset allocation within the fund. That's why the other piece you keep very consistent with, so that you don't have two pieces bouncing around like this. Page 16. As I like to say, let's celebrate the successes. For the past quarter, you ranked in the top 3% nationally in the Investor Voice database that we subscribe to. Year to date, you're in the top 2%, and for the 1 year, in the top 1%. Okay. It's a nice place to be for a $70 million fund. 2 years at 12th percentile, and 3 years in the 43rd percentile. Okay, so. 2012, even though you had a 10% return, because you were as conservatively invested as you were, that put you in the 82nd percentile. So that's why you see more of an average type return over 3 years. Over the last 3 years, it paid to be aggressively invested. You're not investing aggressive, yet you still have done very well. So there's, other than what we've talked about Fidelity, there's not a thing I would do with this change things. Just to reinforce two other things, and I wrap up on this report. You go to page 17, go to the upper right-hand side. It's the upside capture ratio versus the downside capture ratio. What we want to do is look and say, so how do you do in the up markets versus how you do in the down markets? And you want to be up and to the left, okay? So in up markets, you do just about what your policy index does. Not quite. You're at about, I'm going to say about 95%. So if the market's up 10%, on average on up markets, you've been up 9.5% relative to your policy index. In the down markets, you've done, I'm just going to round that to 40% of the down markets. And the lower that number, the better. It means if the market was down 10, you were only down 4. So you've had very, very strong downside protection. Then the question would be, okay, so is this strong performance? Was it just due to, a lot of times because the state has 60%+ of the portfolio, as the state goes, so goes your plan. But if you look actually for the quarter, the state was actually down 0.4%, you were down 0.1%. Year to date, state was up 6.8, you were up 6.3. For the 1 year, the state was up 12.2, you were up 12.4. So it's really the combination of all the pieces fitting together that have worked so well for you. And even at the 3 years, you did 12.9, the state was at 12.9. So, Gina, just so you know, some of the issues that I mentioned to you last week about getting some data, we did have some discussion from the state, and we are getting the data that we need, so everything's good there.
Okay. Great.
Okay. So, unless you want me to tell you more about that, I mean, it's easy when you got good news. Yes.
What don't you personally like about the Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund? I know we thought about it, but
well, so you'll, if you look at it, it go to page 18, so I'm going to say all the good things about it, okay? Look, I say, wow, they were in the top 1%. The year-to-date, the top 2%. The 1 year, the top 3%. What can you not like about it? It's because they have said their peer group is a small cap stock area. If you remember, small cap stock has been down very strongly. But they aren't buying small. You look at their holdings, and they're really a mid-cap manager. If compared to a mid-cap manager universe, they still have done okay. But the bar right now is here, okay? And they've done here. The bar really should be here, okay? And that's why, I think that's part of why they look so good. It still has had very nice performance for you. But you've asked us to look at other choices, so we've brought you, the next thing I want to lead into, if that's next on your list, is here's some other choices to look at. It's expensive, okay? Small cap is going to be more expensive than most funds, other types of investing. But there are some alternatives that are more institutionally designed. It is more of a retail product that you're in, but has done well for you. Okay.
Morningstar, I think, compares it to mid-cap value, and when it compares it to the categories.
Yes. And that's where we would compare them all.
You're saying it's more mid-cap value than small cap.
Right. And so that's actually one of the things that has done so well. If you were only allowed to invest in one spot, large, mid, or small, value, core, growth, the place to have invested over the last 25 years has been mid-cap value. It has had the highest return of any of those nine areas, and it's had the second lowest volatility of those areas. Okay. So that's been a great benefit to have mid-cap value. The question is you go with that mid-cap value, you go with the mid-cap value index fund, which is one of the choices we'll show you, or another fund that's a mid-cap value fund. So we like that space, but is there a better way to access that space?
Mike?
Sure.
Are we leaving managed funds sort of now, or are we going to index, or, I mean... more and more. I know it's the flavor of the month, and I don't mean in your case, but I mean that's all you read about is get into, you know, index.
So our opinion is we think there's some areas that's best to index, and there's some areas it's best to go active. And the global equities, the international equities, and some of the small cap spaces, we think you can add value. The less efficient markets of being able to pick managers that can consistently outperform. In large cap stocks, in mid cap value, you know, those kind in fixed income, it's very tough for a manager to outperform without taking undue risk to get there. Personally, we like a combination of both. In our Consulting Plus, we're about 50-50. I think the state is probably of that, you know, they have some indexing, they have some active also. So mid cap value, because it's been the best area to invest in. Actually, if you look at 5, 10, 20, 25, 30 years, it's been the best place. Indexing has been the best place to be because any active manager is going to gravitate somewhat away from that. Well, if this has been the best area, you don't want them to gravitate away from that, okay? So that's why you'll see in a moment that the indexing had. But I wouldn't want you to go all indexing, but I think in some spaces indexing makes sense.
Let's discuss Fidelity next, okay. And we'll stick with the pension before we move on to the OPEB.
Okay. So that is next in line. Okay. I'll let y'all stick. And we did give you the update through October in there. So you did in your, excuse me, that's in the OPEB fund. Excuse me, when we get to that. I'll come back to that. Okay. So... the purpose, at the last meeting, the investment committee asked to replace Fidelity low price for half of your portfolio, and you asked us to look at other alternatives for that. And more specifically, you asked us to look in the active area. You know, I will tell you, once we did our search and looked at it and said, you know, what do we really want to have here, since you just hired Vanguard Extended Market, which is a small cap area, the space that we want to fill then was the mid-cap, either mid-cap core or mid-cap value. Okay, because you have DuPont, you had the indexing here, we want that sort of in the middle. And going through that process, the two that we identified we liked the best, one was the index fund, Vanguard Mid-Cap Value, and the other was what's called Victory Established Value. Okay? On page two, you see information on each of those, and we put Fidelity in there also so you could do a side-by-side comparison. Okay? The size of the funds, and quite frankly, it's another one of the, I'd say, our concerns about Fidelity, even though, and I'll keep going back to it, they've done a nice job for you. It's almost $50 billion in size. So if they're buying small and mid-cap stocks, you know, one of the questions, are they more mid-cap than small-cap now? Because you just can't run a $50 billion small-cap fund. There's just not enough holdings out there that you can take a position in there and all those. So that's a lot of money in that type. You know, a large cap manager, no problem with that. Okay. Expense ratios, you can see the index fund would be the least expensive. Okay. They're all mutual funds. And we show you what they state as their preferred benchmark. Our preferred benchmark for Fidelity would be the mid-cap. Dave, just as you said, is Morningstar identifies them, and we do too, more than mid-cap value index.
Mike, I'm unfamiliar with that benchmark. Could you say, are you okay with that as a benchmark?
For the Russell 2000?
For the Vanguard preferred benchmark.
Yes. And that's a relatively new one. It's called the CRISP index. Okay. Now, if you ask me exactly what's the difference between that and the Russell and the... I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I have a couple guys back at the office that could tell you. They have told me. But Vanguard, who is very, very thorough and analytical when they do these things, I just don't recall why they like that better than the Russell, though. But I would say, yes, I'm very comfortable that that is the appropriate benchmark for them. So what else? Let's start at page four. I'll show you some returns and then a couple other data points, and then you can decide whether you want to make a change, if you want to make a change for which one. I'm going to go from four, and then I'll go back to three. So over 4 years, you could see, 7 years on page four, and what I'd say is don't pick somebody just because they were the best performers, okay? We just want to give you some feel for, okay, when did somebody do better, when did somebody do worse? What were their overall returns? Over 7 years, Victory, you know, was victorious. They had, you know, 8.8%, okay? The others were nice returns, okay? Over 5 years, it was Vanguard. You know, over 1 year, it was Vanguard, okay? So, and Fidelity seems to fall in the middle, you know, of those. Now, if we go to page three, you know, so I'll work from right to left. You know, in 2013, which was a very strong market, Vanguard had the best performance. Okay, they did also in 2012. In 2011, you can see Victory had the best. But in 2008, Vanguard had the worst. Victory did better in the down market. That's what I pick out of that, is that they had a very strong down market protection, not as strong in the up markets. Again, Fidelity's sort of falling in between those. Now, go on to page five. And this, as you know, this is a page we like a lot to show the capture ratio. And this is relative to the Russell Mid-Cap Value Index. Vanguard should, as you might expect, did about what the benchmark did, just a little bit better in the down markets. But you would expect them to be right around that crosshairs there. Okay. Victory and Fidelity did about the same in up markets, but Victory gave more protection in the down markets. So one of the things I think you'd want to look at is say, what is more important for you now, look in the context of your overall portfolio? Is it the ones that give, at least historically, have given more protection in the down market? Or is it the one that did better in the upmarket. And I don't think there's, it's not like Vanguard is up and to the right-hand side. They're just, they are an index. That's what you expect them to be.
Yeah, and the ratio percentages here only range from 85 to 110, so it's not as if you're starting at zero. So the
right.
I mean, these percentage differences are small.
Yeah, they're not huge differences, yeah. And then page 6, gives you some pros and cons of each of those, and then information on each of the, give you 2 pages of information on each of the funds, what their holding, top holdings are, their sector allocations, their performance relative to the benchmarks, things like that.
You see anything in their holdings, Vanguard versus Victory, that is a concern or a notable difference?
Well, I'd say just the number of holdings. Okay, so it's it comes down to when you hire an active manager with that number of holdings, if they're picking the winners, then it gets multiplied for you, because Vanguard will have most of those holdings. They'll just have them in smaller percentages. Okay, so if Victory is picking, let's say, the winners, then they should outperform. If not, then I mean, it sounds sort of simple, but it's a number of holdings that I'd focus on, and I'd focus on that their methodology is to protect a little bit more in the down market, which I say historically has been where Sussex County has been, to err on that side. However, you also have a low allocation, a lower allocation in equities than most plans. Your structure, your portfolio, and the performance of your portfolio already has given you a lot of downside protection. Do you want more downside protection there, or do you want a little bit more juice on the upside?
What if we went 50-50? Do you recommend any of that, going both Victory and Vanguard? There's a lot of money in there.
I would say, because you already split Fidelity once,
yeah,
I would pick pick one, And you may end up staying with Fidelity. There's 3 choices there for you to look at.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in looking at the 3, the price earnings ratio is for Fidelity is 13.13. And Vanguard's 22, and Victory is 20.6.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, in terms of the types of companies they invest in.
Well, so Fidelity is going to, Fidelity is really just picking low-priced stocks, and that's why they can be all over the place. If you could have a very, very large company, and if it's low price. It's not price to earnings. It's just, if the price in the market is $10 a share, that's what they're picking. Now, the they're doing some fundamental analysis also on those companies, but they're not going to, if they like a company and its price is $100 a share, they're not going to pick it, okay? I think the byproduct of their process has this low price to earnings ratio. Generally, stocks with lower price earnings ratios have done better than ones with higher price earnings ratios. However, you can get too cheap also. The question is, if you buy cheap, is it cheap and getting cheaper, or cheap and going to get... And my one concern with Fidelity is, when I see the price earnings ratio that low, why are they that low?
So the low price stock fund, basically they want to just buy them as many shares as they can. I mean, said low price, obviously you're going to be able to buy more shares, and with the fundamentals, they believe obviously it's going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
To just get the big number of shares there.
Sometimes, aren't they, they're more, a little more small cap oriented by doing that, because they're buying companies that are not, they're not only buying companies that are just at a low price, that may, like Microsoft, but they're buying companies that have not been around that long and, you know, may have a low stock price.
Yeah. Generally, you're going to have a bias toward the small cap, the smaller cap side and the mid cap side that will tend to be the smaller companies, mm-hmm. you know. But if they're going to be, you know, the other two are, you know, the mid cap value index is going to be mid cap value. You already invested in small cap with the extended market. You know, the question is, are you getting some redundancy by having Fidelity and that index fund that you just chose? You know, would you be better, more targeting to mid cap for, you know, either through Victory or Vanguard?
Well, we're going to want to go with value in the future. I mean, because growth is not projected to be outstanding, I mean, in the next few years, I don't think. I mean, stocks are hitting all-time highs, and, you know, I mean, I've read, you know, the growth may not be, you know, as great as it has been going forward, you know, a few years.
I mean, our expectations are that, first off, that stock returns are going to, beyond bond returns, I think, almost absolutely have to be below historic norms. We think equities, despite what they continue to do this year and prove us wrong, that the better and better they do, you know, ultimately, if you're going from here to here over 10 years, and you go like this for the first several years, then you've got to go more like this for the next, okay? And value has historically done better in down markets. You know, I you know, as we've always preached, is that we'd like a bit of a value tilt. Yeah. Yeah. You will get some value tilt out of any three of these. All three of these have, you know, a fairly strong value component to it. And so seeing some of your portfolio move a little bit in that direction, I think is, but you're already there with Fidelity. No.
Yeah. Thank you.
I guess I don't understand the Vanguard index approach. My presumption going in would be that their portfolio would have a little bit of the entire Russell mid-cap value space. Their holdings would be closer to 566 than 200, mm-hmm. and that their allocations would pretty nearly exactly reflect the index. And so they're picking winners and losers somehow within the space. I'm looking on that page 7.
Well,
can you say more about what they're doing?
Okay, so they actually aren't picking winners and losers. We had to make a decision whether we showed them versus the CRSP index. Okay, and the CRSP index has less holdings in it because of the way Russell does their methodology. Okay, but we thought, well, we'd rather show them compared to the other two and use the same benchmark. So they are truly just indexing. Mm-hmm. But Russell, just so you know, most of the purveyors out there, where it's S&P or Russell or Wilshire or whatever, they will take a stock and say, you're either value or you're growth, or you may be core. Russell will look at some stock and say, well, you're 75% value and 25% growth, and this one's, so that one's going to get into there, and this one that's 25% value and 75% growth is still going to show up into the value index. So their value index looks a lot, has much more holdings in it. So that, but is, they are truly doing indexing. They're not picking winners and losers.
You have a recommendation?
No. Well, actually, we, you know, so our job is to narrow it down to a couple choices and then sort of give you the pros and cons. But now, on the OPEB side, we do give recommendations, so we'll get to that in a minute. So,
I like both of them. But I see your point.
Yeah, if we've done a good job, it's got to be a tough decision.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
They both had strong points.
Well, that's what's tough. If we were in the top 1% for the last year,
yeah.
Do we really want to make a change? Vanguard being least expensive and maybe given us more. We are already downside protected very well. So maybe we need to start looking towards something like Vanguard or indexed, so it's still very safe. So if anything, if we're not going to stay with Fidelity, I think Vanguard looks like a good option.
I feel the same way.
Pretty close anyway, so I mean.
Very close.
I mean, if one was markedly ahead of the other, it'd be different, but yeah.
Right.
Index is safer.
It is. And Fidelity hasn't been performing as well for us for the last couple of years. It seems to be going down. So I don't know, I would think we would.
It was a good fund for many years, but you know, right now it's stumbling a little bit. So, you know, I see your point. I mean, it's performing okay, but there are underlying problems with it.
Yeah, well, I would say if they were in what we consider the right peer group,
yeah.
We chose to use what they have asked to be compared to, but we think the mid-cap mm-hmm. value is probably the best index. And yeah. Although still looking good, it doesn't look as anywhere near as good in that peer group the last year anyway.
Do I have a motion for moving any funds out of Fidelity?
I'll make a motion to move all the funds out of the Fidelity low price stock fund into the Vanguard. Let me get the exact title of it.
Mid-cap value index fund.
Thank you. Mid-cap value index fund.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, motion and a second to move the remaining funds out of Fidelity to the Vanguard Mid-Cap Value Index. We will now take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you. Mr. Schoen, if you want to move on to the OPEB fund at this time.
Okay. Okay, so we have in the bound report that we were looking at a moment ago, but we'll go to tab 3, and then we have the one-page update on that. So page 35, as of the end of September, the value was $29.8 million. As of the end of October, it was $30 million, and as of close last night, I think it's $30.2 million. Third quarter gain, there's a typo there. That should say a loss of $193,800. You see a couple commas in there. It wasn't $1 million loss. It was $193,800 loss for the quarter. Third quarter returned down 0.6, down 0.7, and you're at age 3.5 and 3.2. You outperformed your benchmark by 15 basis points. And that put you in the top 6% in the investor force universe for past year. It doesn't look as good as the state, but it's still very good. You know? So, looking ahead, we'll get to it, is proposing some fund changes. We did actually take part of what you had mentioned about, is there a way to narrow the list down? So we come back with some ideas in that. We also, independent of that, even if you didn't narrow it down, there's some changes that we've made to the Consulting Plus, just not big changes, but a couple changes that we would recommend if you went with the full lineup, okay? So, we're at the one-year anniversary of this Consulting Plus that we've provided, and, you know, we want to talk about whether you want to continue that on, not continue it on, you know, et cetera. And then, in case you weren't aware, that GASB has also come out with an exposure draft on the OPEB funds. So starting in 2016, it looks like, although it might get pushed back a year, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
That just like with the pension plan, this year you're going to have to show the impact on the pension fund and the next year on your overall county funds, so the impact of the liability. The OPEB fund's going to have the same thing. I can tell you, as I've mentioned many times, of of all of our clients, you are absolutely the best funded OPEB fund by a long shot. And although I don't have a database to support this, I suspect nationally you are one of the best funded OPEB liabilities. Many other government, whether counties, cities, towns, or boroughs, whatever, haven't even begun to fund that liability, let alone, you know, be in the spot you are. So, and as I always say, you're more likely to be able to fulfill that promise if the assets are there. Okay, page 37, you see the cash flows. There was withdrawal out of the funds of $308,000, so you're 30.3, went down to 29.8 at the end of the quarter. Year to date, you also see the withdrawals and the earnings. And page 38, you see fund by fund, you know, and we've been working with Gina with, you know, what was happening sometimes. Cash was coming in, big chunk of cash coming in, and a big chunk of cash going back out. And it was playing some havoc with the investment of funds. Now it's timed up that you're basically putting the contribution in each month to match up to what the distribution would be, and it makes the management of it, you know, really great. So your asset allocation for the total fund 39 is all within the ranges as spelled out in investment policy statement. And you can see on page 40, at least for the quarter, you've now moved up to near the top of the class. A lot of that is driven because you're more conservatively invested. Some of it's also because you have a lower international allocation than the average fund. It's the same universe as your pension funds compared to. But there's also been a big improvement in relative performance since we made all the manager changes, it was mid-January. Okay.
We were middle of the pack there for a while, weren't we? Quite a while, as far as performance.
Well, for a while there, you were down at the bottom of the pack.
Bottom, okay.
Yeah, and then you moved up sort of to the middle of the pack. And the year to date, although still at the 71st percentile, I'll show you that the impact, once you got all these changes in place, is, you know, how much difference it's made for you.
Great.
Okay. And then on page 41, I'll just show you that the gray bars are to the right. Most of the gray bars are to the right on there. That means your total fund added above its policy index by 15 basis points for the quarter. And all that, plus a little bit more, was due to the equity manager's outperformance. Fixed income had a slight underperformance, 1 basis point. It's not meaningful. Okay. And that's Wilmington Trust that manages that. And Wilmington Trust, I think, in both accounts are doing exactly what you're looking for. It's very conservatively managed. It's a good offset to some of the other pieces in the portfolio, and it's structured to roll out the, you know, for the most part, hold on to the bonds and hold them to maturity, but they do monitor them. They don't just tuck them away and not follow them. You know, so, and we do talk to Don Duramo several times a quarter about your account, several others we have with them. So, okay. Page 43, you can just see the individual funds. At least you can see for the third quarter, all of them rank in the, you know, Washington Mutual top 10%, index fund top 20%, T. Rowe the top 28%. You do have the mid-cap value index already in that fund, top 22%. You can see on and on and on. All of them have done, you know, very well relative to their peer group. This one-page update shows through the end of October, and you added another 40 basis points in return relative to your index. So where your index was up 1.4% for the month, you were up 1.8%, okay? And that puts you almost up to your index for the year to date. And since February 1st, which was the point in time that it was late in January that all these changes were put in place, you're ahead of your policy index by about 0.5%. So we're happy about that performance. I hope you are also. But I think the question, unless you have questions about this, you know, really some of the questions are about the restructuring, you know, whether we narrow the list down, okay, or we, you know, make a couple changes, because even though we've liked the performance, liked it a lot, you know, we continue to do analysis. You know, our motto is always better. So there's a couple changes that we would recommend if you stay with us, even with you stay with this lineup. So, any questions about performance?
I see that on page 42, where the upside downside is in the least favorable arena. Is there anything that's anything notable that contributes that to that?
Yeah. So I said, first off, you used to be further to the right, and it's been coming back. Quite frankly, you know, when you first launched the OPEB fund, it was the list of choices you had available because of the method that you had to go about choosing left you with, I'd say, a tough group to pick from. It was just the ones who responded to the RFP, you know. And so, you know, we've talked about this for several years, is like that lineup wasn't very good, and it was put you deeply, you know, into that lower right-hand side. Over time, you've made some changes, and then at the beginning of this year, you asked us to make changes, and that's what's brought it across. But you have several years of legacy of, you know, bad performance. In fact, you could, if you go to page 42, at the right-hand side, relative to your policy index, you could see you had many, many quarters, whether up or down quarters, where you were under your benchmarks. If you notice the last two quarters, you're above your benchmarks. Not a lot, but above your benchmarks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sure.
The next item on the agenda is the update on the performance of the way you manage the OPEB fund before we get into the recommendation. Is that okay?
Or, sure. Okay. Either way, I have them in the other order, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about that, and then if we want to, as we're talking about our changes, how we want to continue the relationship.
Sure. So which order do you want to do?
So let's do the performance for the last year on the Consulting Plus.
Yeah, okay, gotcha, okay. So that's this.
Okay.
And I would say it's, we all agreed to this in, I guess it was late November, early December last year. The implementation of it finally occurred like around the 20th of January, okay? So Consulting Plus, what do we think are the benefits of it, you know? Swift manager changes, rapid implementation of our best ideas. We are working on some other projects just in total across the board for our clients. You know, do you include real estate? What are the pros and cons of that in the portfolio? And just overall fixed income structure with this low returns expected in the fixed income, what do you do about that? You know, what some are doing is saying, go to like an unconstrained fixed income approach, pedal to the metal, try to add return. I will tell you, that's not really our philosophy, and I really think that's really not your philosophy. You have other issues out there that, you know, but let's say if we have deflation, you know, what do you do with that? Are there ways to protect yourself in that and with a slowing economy? You know, because the answer to some organizations say, we'll put more and more into equities. Now, if you're 60% equities, and I'm sort of getting off track a little bit here, but I apologize. If you're 60% equities, going to 65, I don't think is a big leap. But we have some clients who are, you know, like at 65, do they go to 70? And 70 is sort of like this, the third rail that they don't mind getting up to 68 or 69%, but 70 gets, but it's sort of like, so what do you do? So a number of them are increasing your allocation to equities, but then if the economy goes down, what do you do? So we're looking at, are there things you can do on the fixed income side to better protect yourself in that? So these are just some of the things that we're working on for you. A disciplined portfolio rebalancing every Monday. You know, you do the report, you know, send it to Gina. Here's where you are. We talk about whether there's a need to rebalance. More importantly, you know, cash needs. So we're on top of that each week together with Gina, and we've come up with a solution that I think works very well with that. And as I mentioned, the weekly portfolio review and weekly looking at each of the managers. Before that, prior to January, you know, you had quarterly portfolio review, so ad hoc portfolio rebalancing, and quite frankly, a slower implementation, and for at least a while, suboptimal portfolio structures. So, page three, we looked at how did your portfolio do relative to the policy index before, and we took it actually through December, because January, it got implemented like January 20th. So we split it up through December, and then from February onward, because January was sort of half and half. For the time period before that, you had a return of 6%, your policy index was 9%. Up through September, so February 1st to September 30th, policy index was, you did 5.6, your policy index was 5.6. And in October, which is not in this number, you added another 40 basis points, so you're actually ahead of the policy index from February 1st. That's reflected, it's reflected on this page, but this was done, this just got done the other, after we had finished this. Okay. Page four just shows the difference of, you know, if you had Consulting Plus during all that time period versus if you didn't. That's the graph on the lower left-hand side. Page five, we actually walk you through what your portfolio changes have been over time. Okay, so where you were third quarter 2011, so forth and so forth. January 2014, the changes we put in place. And then September 2014, these are what we came up with, the changes we would do, but knowing that you were looking at either maybe narrowing a list of funds, may or may not continue on with Consulting Plus, you know, we didn't come to you and say, here's what we would recommend. We were doing that today, that we would, here's the changes we would make to that, what you have. It's not big changes, but some small changes. Okay. And then I would suggest the next steps are, you know, evaluating how, you know, was this of value to the county, and was it enough value for the cost? Okay. So to me, we looked and said, there's several options. One is you could say, no, it wasn't. No, we're not going to pay you for last year. I mean, that's an option. Or
don't pay you for last year.
That's what they agreed.
Yeah, that's what the agreement was. The agreement, yeah. It was worse than negotiating with Yale.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, quite frankly, what I wanted, as you know, as I said, look, I so believed that you needed to make changes. I was willing to do that, and then you could evaluate. And if at the end you say, wasn't worth it, that's okay. You know, I knew that's what I put on the table for you. I wanted to get you to a certain spot, and you're there, okay? You could say, wow, this was great, and we want to continue it, so obviously we'll pay you for last year, and we'll pay you for going forward. Or you could say, that was great, appreciate it, we will pay you for last year, but we don't want it going forward, okay? And I think those are three options that I could think of. Now, one of the things I did do, you know, at the time, what I quoted was 10 basis points. Okay, 10 basis points is $30,000 a year for this additional services. I talked to Lee, who's my partner, and I said, "What we're in consideration of the totality of all that we do with you, that we would knock it down to 7 basis points, which, because that equates to roughly $20,000. So, and that would be going backwards and going forward, or even just going backwards if that's all you want is from what we did for the year.
So I would be curious as to your opinion, Gina, in terms of, you know, administratively, there's work to be done to oversee the fund. And
right.
Is this a help?
It has been very helpful to have the weekly report, which you guys get, I distribute to you as well, and making sure we are in balance, and it has been very helpful. I thought 10 basis points was a little high for it. I didn't realize that you'd come back with 7. I do agree. I would recommend that we pay him
Pierce Park for the last year, what they did. It did help us. I do want to make that recommendation. The only thing is, I think we're on a good path now, so I don't know if the value is there as much now going forward, because as you can see by the weekly reports, there's no changes needed anymore right now. We're well balanced. So we could try it without, we'll pay the $7 this time, do it without a year, see if we, how our fund performs, because it performed very well this year. See if we see a drop in that, and then pick it up again in another year. But I think he's got us on the right track, and he deserves to be compensated for it. And I think moving forward, we can try it the other way and then go forward from there.
Michael, what is the basis points going forward on the regular pension? Still 10?
10, yeah. In essence, so it'd be 10 for all your assets,
yeah,
okay? And so for last year, the OPEB really would be 17, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, that was part of our consideration when we looked at the totality of things and said, look, let's bump this piece down, so.
And the regular pension, that's not the state portion, that's your...
No, that includes the state assets, so okay. Yeah, because... Rest assured, we're just spending a lot of time getting information from there. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. They do work with the state often to get the information. They're not.
Yeah. Although I didn't delve into it today, there's a lot of information there, like on your hedge funds and your private equity, and well, at least what percentage is of that. And we talked to them about their policy index. And so yeah.
You need to stay at 10 on the regular. You need to stay at 10 basis points.
I could lower that, but I'd increase the OPEB. So
yeah,
I sort of look at the totality of it. So
yeah.
You know, when I look at all that we do for all of it, I think the number is a very fair figure. So if I lowered to one, I'd have to up the other. So
sure.
Well, I would make a motion then, reflecting Gina's comments, that we discontinue Consulting Plus and pay Pierce Park 7 basis points for the services rendered last year.
Okay.
I second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second to discontinue Consulting Plus and pay Pierce Park Group 7 basis points, which is about $20,000. We'll take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson? Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
So we'll check it out for a year, see it.
See if how it goes, but it went very well this year. See. The next item is the OPEB portfolio options.
Okay. So you get the last specific recommendations of fund change. You still get all the service. Okay, so a little background, okay? So you recently lowered your OPEB assumed rate of return from 8 to 7.5. You know, given the fixed income environment, can your current asset mix be 7.5, okay? Because what we want to talk about is multiple issues here. What should be your target asset allocation? You know, what should be your value and capitalization tilts, and then what should your investment lineup look like, okay? And how many managers? And part of this will be in the large cap equity space, okay? Do you use DuPont, who have done a very nice job for you on the pension side, or you could index it with Vanguard? Again, it's, in our opinion, not going to be an easy decision there, you know, so. So going on to page 2, sort of reiterating what I just said, the decisions to make, percentage allocation to equities, capitalization style targets, number of managers, DuPont and Vanguard, and Consulting Plus. So we've knocked off the last one of those things. Okay. So return. So the first part we'll deal with is the equity targets. Okay. We're just giving you some historic perspective on things that, you know, If you look at a real long time period, stocks have outperformed bonds by about 5 percentage points a year, 10.9 versus 5.4. But inflation was 3.8. Do take that in mind, okay? Okay, so basically stocks have outperformed inflation by 7%, bonds by about 1.5%. For the last 20 years, about the same thing. Stocks did about 7% better than inflation. We look at the last 5 years, it's been dramatically better than inflation. In 10 years, it was less than that. So, but longer periods of time, that's a pretty good premium to look at over inflation for stocks. Bonds typically will do, you know, about 2.5% above inflation. However, the markets are saying inflation is going to be about 2% over the next 5 years, even next 10 years. And fixed income is going to do about 2 to 2.5%. So all you're going to do is match inflation there. You know, so I know I keep coming back to this issue, but it's an issue that you need to, you know, I think you took a nice step of lowering return assumption, but still have some gap to fill there, one way or the other.
And just to add, I have talked to the auditors this week. They're very happy with the 7.5% on our pension side because we have a lot in the state fund. Mm-hmm. They're thinking on the OPEB, we probably need to either think about lowering the 7.5 or going, you know, to 65% or increasing the equities. But they are okay with the one fund. They are concerned about this fund.
Okay.
So just to reiterate that we're hearing you and they're saying the same thing.
And page 5, you know, we just want to look and say, okay, so what's the difference if you were at 60% equities or 65% equities? And so we looked at it last 20 years, and if you had $30 million, which you have roughly right now, what does that mean? And I know 20 years is a long time, but the two things I would observe is one is ultimately it makes a $4.5 million difference, okay? Decide whether that's meaningful or not. And that's also the time when yields on fixed income were around 5%. Now yields are, in fact, you've not only do you have a more conservative asset allocation mix within your fixed income, you're more conservative than the average. And our clients are more conservative across the board, or more conservative than the average, and then you're even more conservative than our conservative clients. Okay, so just giving up some return because of that. Okay, so then we looked and said, so what would a 5% more, if you had 5% more allocated to equities, okay, what would have that done? Well, in 2008, the worst equity market, it would have made about 2% difference. Stocks were down 40%, 37% U.S., and bonds were actually up. So that's the worst case over that time period, and I'd say, although we didn't go back and look, I'd say probably over the last 50 years, it's probably the worst case. Okay. You would have given up some also in 2000, 2001, 2002, but they were more about, you know, 1% there. Okay. An extra loss of 2% on $30 million would impact the county by about $80,000 a year because it gets smoothed. That impact is smooth. So we want to give you some perspective of like, okay, wow, if we lost 2% more by going one than the other in the worst market, what does that really mean to us? Okay. So can you tolerate a potential increase in your contributions, meaning if equity markets are down, given a higher expected return for equities than fixed income? Okay. Then the next thing we wanted to do was just talk about your equity tilts. And the reason why I do this is because of where you are right now versus where, you know, where we want to make sure you're at, this sort of some tilt toward value, some tilt toward mid cap versus the index, okay? And this is just reconfirming, you know, why we like mid-cap. This is the last 25 years, but whether you look at 20 years, 25, 30 years, you know, the best performer has been the mid-cap value. And as I mentioned earlier, the second lowest volatility was mid-cap value. The lowest volatility was large-cap value. And you can see small-cap value had a lower volatility than mid-cap growth and small-cap growth. Again, why we like this value tilt. Okay. Now, put this in here because somebody asked us once of us. They said, well, so that's 25 years. Is it just because where you start it and where you end it when you, you know, it's, these things can be very dependent upon that time period. Maybe the market just got really excited about mid-cap the last 5 years. Is there really a fundamental reason why mid-cap has done better? And the answer is yes. Because ultimately, stocks are going to do increase by the growth of that, those companies, the earnings growth of those companies. Okay, and the gold is mid-cap stocks. The blue and the red are small and large cap. Mid-cap companies have had a much greater earnings per share growth rate, you know, over, you know, what's a 25-year time period than the other areas. And we liken it to the Goldilocks. The large companies, they just can't grow that much fast. You know, once they get to a certain size, it's just they won't keep going at that rate. The small cap companies, they can come mid cap, but in the real economic downturns, sometimes they don't even stay around. Okay? So it's the ones who have more sustainability, have gotten to the mid-cap size. So we think there's a good, strong, fundamental reason why we see this, you know, mid-cap. So now, looking at equity options, and you're looking at this idea, we're trying to narrow the list down, okay? You know, narrowing the list down, we looked at both, well, why not use some of what, I mean, pension funds done so well? Why not use pieces of that? DuPont's done a great job for you. So we thought, well, in the large cap space, either use DuPont or use the Vanguard Index Fund. Okay. There's not a lot that I can necessarily tell you because you already know much about each of those. You know, the DuPont one is going to be more expensive, but I will tell you the price that they charge for an active manager at 35 basis points for a portfolio that size is very reasonable, very fairly priced. Okay. If you look at returns over the last 7 years, they've done exactly the same. That's net of fees. This is on page 12. They've both done 6%. DuPont has done better the last 5 years, and Vanguard did a little bit better in 2008. But it's not a lot of difference. You can, in 2009, you can look at page 13. So if you ask me my opinion on this, not only would I say, well, it's your decision, I don't know either. I mean, it's really which you feel more comfortable with. They're both, because when we get to this rest of the structure, you know, that's one of the decisions you'll have to make. Okay. Page 14, we show the pros and cons of the two different approaches. Okay, we like them both. One thing we wanted to introduce to you, and we actually put this is one on page 15, we've put this in the Pierce Park Pension Fund and actually other of our Consulting Plus funds. There's a thing called low vol global equity. You know, one of the things that people can say, well, yeah, we think we'd like to increase our equity allocation. But, boy, that brings on a lot more volatility. Well, you can lessen the impact of adding to equities by picking managers who have lower betas, lower volatilities. And you have some of that already with MFS International Value and a couple of those, Washington Mutual, et cetera. They do better in the down markets. But there's some funds out there that are designed not just to have a little bit lower beta, but to have a lot lower beta. Low volatility. They're specifically looking to have, you know, if they're lucky, they'll match the market in the up market. Most of the time, they won't even do that. But they'll do very, very well in the down markets. Okay. You might say, well, why would we introduce that if what we've been talking about is, you know, you need a little bit more juice to your portfolio? Well, but if you increase your equities from 60 to 65%, okay. And maybe add a little bit more to like Thornburg and Dodge and Cox, who have just done great and more aggressive. Then we still want to have something as a counterbalance to it, okay? Which is this piece to it. So that 65% equities might look more like a 63% equity because you've got something like this in here, okay? You know. You go to page 17 on MFS low vol. You can see on the upper left-hand side. Now, this is a relatively new product. MFS has been around for those who, you know, has been around for a long time. I think they started in 31. You were around then, I think, right? You can speak of that. I think they started, and very venerable, great firm, been, you know, this just happens to be one product that they've come out to help address this idea of, you know, how do you help dampen the volatility of equities. So far, and it's only been 2 years and 8 months, you know, through the end of June, okay, we didn't have the end of September when we put this together. You can see that in the up markets, they did about 80% of the up market. In the down market, they only did about 30, 35% of the down market. So the market was down 10, and they were only down 3.5. Now, do I expect them to continue to be that low on that spectrum? No. I think they will be more around a 60 to 70% in the down market. Okay. But still, really strong downside protection that they give there. And as part of the overall investment portfolio structure, you know, we'd like that as part of the space there. Okay, so on to tab 4. Let me stop. Does anybody have any question about the MFS fund?
Yes. I know that it's a new fund and the returns have been good, as you explained. But why this one for this type of fund? I mean, it versus, say, another fund. I'm not going to give any examples, but another low volatility fund that's maybe been around a little longer as
well. Actually, most record. There are only really two or three funds that have been around that are mutual funds. Most of the low vol products, because they're global equities, okay, are in like CITs. Like Acadian's had a product since 2008 that a client of ours has invested in. I can't think of the name there right now. Martingale has had one since then. So the product itself is relatively new, really 6 or 7 years for anybody. But they don't have it in mutual fund format. You know, Vanguard, by the way, has a fund, a low vol fund now also, which is actually less expensive than this, okay, but they're not doing active management. Because you had a lot of other Vanguard, we wanted to get some active management on this side. But I will tell you, Vanguard has a very good fund in this area also. So we actually had some internal, wasn't heated because we never have heated, we had collegial discussion, but we went back and forth internally whether this one or Vanguard's fund, okay? So if you like the concept, now Vanguard's fund though is only start at the beginning of this year. So it's lower expense, but there was only eight months of data for them. So we'd rather have something with 2 years and 8 months of data versus 8 months of data, you know. Now,
isn't there an ETF or two out there that
Russell has an ETF on this. Yes, they do. Yeah. Still relatively new, you know, and it's just an ETF. The thing we like about MFS is, you know, Russell's is just, they're just, you know, think of it as a low vol index fund. With this, MFS is actually picking the stocks they like the best, fundamental analysis, and then say, okay, now of the stocks we like, which ones have had the lowest volatility, and we're going to blend those together to create something. Now, I will also tell you, our job is to bring you what I consider our best ideas. But you are also in a very good spot right now. You might say, okay, thanks, Michael. Thanks for the idea. Let's monitor it some more. Let's watch that fund a little bit more. Let's watch the Vanguard fund a little bit more. And I think there's not, you know, it's not like, ooh, you really got to change something. This is just, you think, just something else. So.
In terms of the low volatility, this is a global equity fund.
Mm-hmm.
And am I right, the DuPont Large Cap and the Vanguard Institutional are both domestic equity funds. Am I right?
Yes.
And is there a flavor of the MFS that is a domestic as opposed to global?
Yeah, actually, in the MFS, Well, in the global, they're going to have international and U.S. stocks. Oh, you're asking, do they have just a U.S. only?
Right.
They do, but it hasn't done as well. So we didn't, we're not as big on that one as this one. Okay. Here's the other thing that another reason why we'd like to add it in there. If you look on page 19, see you have Thornburg, and Thornburg is probably I'm gonna say it's probably the worst time to give them more money because they've done so well this year. You know. But we wanted to get a little bit more juice on the equity side. So with Thornburg, who, you know, they're going to do as better in the up markets, not as well in the down markets. You know, this allowed us to get more with Thornburg because we offset it with some protection on the downside with that low vol fund.
So you're increasing Thornburg and then going with the minimum volatility fund.
Yes.
Which is a mix of U.S. and
right.
Foreign.
As is Thornburg. So when you blend all these things together, we were looking to get yourself at the, if you look at the 60, let's say the 60 V1, okay, and the only difference between V1s and V2s is DuPont or Vanguard. It's the only difference. You know, in the 60, you know, we would add that we want to get to that 14% international target. And actually, same thing with 65. If you went to 65, staying at the 14% target. So we made sure that these combinations all get you to your asset allocation mix of whether it be 46-14 domestic and international, or if you upped it up by 5% to 51-14.
Okay. And if we went to the 65, the county wanted to go to 65% equities. That's somewhat comparable to what we're already doing on the pension plan because of the DuPont is 70% in equities.
We're at the state.
Mm-hmm. Or the state, not DuPont. The state.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, after talking to the auditors and knowing how I'm going to have to report our liabilities and things like that for this OPEB fund, they said, realistically, at your 60%, you are not going to meet the goals that you need at the 60%. So you should move to 65. You're not really taking on that much risk and looking and spreading it out. 65%, you're going to see the returns that you want to see that you have in your policy to get to the 7.5%. Mm-hmm. So to me, it makes sense. Keep pension where it is and the OPEB move to 65%.
I like that too.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
In terms of our policy, would we need to change our investment policy in the OPEB to adopt any of these changes, to adopt any of the V1, V2
changes?
We would.
Absolutely.
Well, if you stayed with 60 V1 or V2, you would not need to change the investment policy statement.
Right, just to 65.
If you change to 65%, you would need to change it. And you can see on 19, you know, what we tried to do was, you know, take, you know, narrow, you know, have less funds in there for you.
Didn't we have a
but I will also tell you, at least historically, the returns weren't as good by didn't take some of those out.
Didn't we have a 5% leeway plus or minus on the 60% that we could utilize? Or?
You do, but that was really more in investment policy statement, you want to have a target. And yeah. So if your target is now 65, I would redo that because yeah. Let's just say even though you have plus or minus 5, if you're starting right at the edge at 65, yeah. And the equities go up, then you'll be up. You'll be beyond your.
Yeah.
When looking at page 20 and knowing where we are in the market cycle and all the rest, do you think the value growth tilt change is a helpful thing and beneficial, or do you see that as not meaningful or a negative?
Well, I won't say that I know who's going to be the better performer for the next year or 2 years. What I can say is that, I'll say our core belief is that over time, having a tilt toward value is beneficial. Whether doing it right now or 3 months or 6 months from now, I don't know. What I do know is right now with the mix you have, you actually have a bit of a tilt toward growth, okay? And it's not a big tilt, but that's not, you know, if you embrace at least being neutral and or being tilted toward value, there's a need to change to get it, you know, toward this, you know, we sort of like around this 55% value to growth, you know. It doesn't have to be exactly that number, but around that range.
I'm reluctant on the 32 having 35% in the Vanguard institutional index. It just seems like a lot in one place, you know.
Percentage-wise,
right.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, it'd be difficult. I'm not sure. So if you're thinking of maybe splitting up it with DuPont,
yeah,
that would be an awfully small portfolio for them to run. That'd be about $5 million. I mean, we could ask them, but that's a pretty small portfolio for them to manage for you. Because 17, you know, roughly 17% of $30 million is $5.1 million.
So, all right. So the 31%, I'm looking at the 60% V2, 31% of Vanguard, 30 is a percentage of the total portfolio as opposed to millions of dollars.
Right. So in the case of Vanguard, that's really a $10 million in an index fund. Right now, you have, with the state, you have $42 million in one pool. So, I mean, depends where your comfort is, but, you know, even in the state with DuPont, you have, what, $12 million that they're managing for you. That's what 35% would be, about $10 million.
DuPont's been very strong for a long time. So.
Pardon me?
DuPont's been very strong for a long time. You got, you know, active management there. And I mean, they made a presentation. I thought that was outstanding a few years ago. They brought in people you wouldn't believe. I mean, everybody had a Wharton degree. And the guy who did the medical stocks analysis was an MD and all this.
Yeah.
Talk about it. He wasn't at, I mean, MD wasn't here, but other people were. But I mean, but I know you know the numbers tell the story. But
oh yeah, that's why I say if myself, I could tell you right now, I would be hard pressed to, you know, say which, you know, if you're comfortable with DuPont, I'd say absolutely go with them. If you prefer Vanguard, you know, that's why we threw two options. Normally we say here's our recommendation, and we're like,
yeah. What were you saying, Dave, about DuPont?
Well, what do you think would be a reasonable pool that DuPont would accept in terms of dollars amount?
I mean, we'd have to ask them. But I mean, I do know that they came down their spectrum some for the one pool.
Well, we'd be in the same type fund, wouldn't we?
Pardon me?
We'd be in the same type fund that we're in with our regular pension.
Oh, yeah, they'd manage it just the same way.
Separate, yeah. So it wouldn't be too much duplication there. I mean, it would be duplication, but it wouldn't have extraordinary extra costs.
Right, yeah, I think they would charge it the same 35 basis points on that. I don't think, yeah. So right now you have,
$13 million,
okay, on the pension side. So really the question, do you want them to have, say, $23 million of your overall funds? Are you comfortable with that? Okay. If you're not comfortable with that, then I'd say look at it in the totality of things, that even though the index fund would be, you know, maybe all of this space here, you'd have DuPont half here and Vanguard, you know, think of it, the total that's being managed, you know, between the two funds.
What do you think you were talking before?
Well, I I'm getting vibes at the table that we're feeling pretty good about both of these and would like to create a split if we could. The Vanguard is only 4 basis points, and that's with a minimum investment of $5 million, if I've got that right.
Yes.
And if our investment were less than that, do we still get an institutional rate, but some rate higher than 4 basis points? Would it be 10 or?
Yeah, I'm going to guess it's probably around 10. I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah. But I also mentioned, you know, part of what we were trying to do for you was lower the number of funds. You know, although you might look, once you look at the numbers, when you compare the new 60C versus the narrowed down list, at least historically, having a couple extra funds in there actually is beneficial. So,
yeah, we're going from 12 to 7.
Right.
And which is more reflective, I guess, of the pension.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I'm happy with both of these recommendations, and I'm really struggling to see a significant difference between them.
If they're both pulling their weight, and DuPont is agreeable, and the Vanguard doesn't go up by too many basis points, I mean, maybe we could do what you're proposing, you know, to split it. I mean, because you got, as long as they're, you know, performing, you know, for over a period of time, if they don't seem to work out, which I don't anticipate that, I mean, then you can change it if you wish, obviously.
But I guess the question is, you know, would DuPont manage?
Yeah, that's true.
And effectively manage a $5 million pool? That's a, for a $30 billion or $50 billion shop, that's, you know.
We started at $5 million, though, on our pension. They wanted 10, and we started at 5.
Yeah.
So there's a precedent there. I don't know. This isn't politics, right?
Plus, we have the money in the pension fund, so it's not like we're not.
Yeah, I mean, we're profitable, I'm sure, to them.
It's the same.
Well, our other option might be to just model how this portfolio, say the 65 V1 and V2, model it for a quarter, and then make a decision a quarter from now and go one direction or the other as opposed to splitting. Since you know, it's not as if the current portfolio is a problem. I mean, we're looking to make improvements, but we haven't got dogs in our portfolio that we know we have to jettison right away.
Right. I will say that many times when we're making recommendations, it's like, wow, here's something that, you know, we picked 8 funds, one of them's just not performing well, get rid of it. This was just, okay, it's doing really well, can we make it a little bit better? So, you know, I guess the question would be, would you stick with the lineup you have now, make no changes, which you could do, but would you move it up to 65% equities? You know, and then you would need to do a little bit of rebalancing, although, you know, with the way the equity markets have moved, you're I'm sure you're up above 60%. I just don't know off the top of my head what.
Our auditors are in favor of it. I mean, and it's not we're splitting the difference. I mean, somewhere at 70, we'd be halfway there.
Yeah.
But would, you know, get some better returns maybe.
So you were at 61.5% at the end of October. So I'll estimate that maybe you're at about 62 or 63%, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, could we go with Vanguard and then look at how DuPont would have performed if we went with them and then switch?
Sure. It'll be easier to do it that way than the other way around.
Right.
What you don't want to do, I think, is go to DuPont. They buy individual securities. They do something, and maybe to some degree, I don't want to say a favor, but to some degree, you know, considering, I'm quite frankly, I think partially because it's Delaware and all that, that they went there. I think it'd be better if you did one. I would do Vanguard, and then you could switch to DuPont, not the other way around.
Right, I agree. I think if we go Vanguard and model DuPont after it to see how it would perform later.
Sure.
Then switch to DuPont, or even in the meantime, in the discussions, talk to DuPont. How small would they be willing to take?
Sure.
but I really would like to see us move towards that 65% now instead of waiting another quarter to start moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I like that too, and so I would make a motion that we modify our investment policy for OPEB to reflect a 65% target in equities, and that we adopt the last column to the right, the 65V2 implementation strategy, monitoring DuPont and clarifying whether or not they'd accept a $5 million portfolio.
Okay.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to modify our investment policy statement by 65% equity target, and also making the recommendation to use the last column, V2, and also model watch DuPont for future analysis in the next quarter. Okay, I'll take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Burlington?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you.
I like that we're reducing our estimated expenses as we do this. I really like that a lot.
Yeah. That's about $18,000 a year.
Yeah, that's significant.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Just about covers that $20,000 fee.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that was coming.
You want me to show you how to save some more money? Oh, you did. You saved $18,000 every year and the $20,000.
I appreciate what you do.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is just a reminder. We sent out an email on the dates that we were proposing, February 26th, May 21st, August 20th, and November 19th of 2015. Does anybody have any concerns about those dates? We can start putting them on the calendar. No.
Did you and I agree to this?
You've agreed.
Did I?
I
thought I did, but can you tell me those dates again?
Sure. February 26th, May 21st, August 20th, and November 19th. Okay. And is there any additional business, Mr. Leahy?
Yes, thank you. I've been reading, I'm sure you've all been reading about Detroit and actuarial methods that are used for municipal governmental plans and how they, and what possible shortcomings there may be, especially when compared with corporate pension plans. And, sitting on this committee, I feel less robustly prepared to understand these differences and changes, and I'm very concerned too that there may be a date in the not too distant future where some of the underpinnings of our long-term strategies related to maintaining compliance with actuarial standards will change dramatically at one point in time, and I'm just wondering whether it might be prudent for us to challenge our actuaries and have a special meeting or take time at one of our meetings to try to get ahead of the curve here and understand what proactively might be occurring in the future and understand how that might affect funding streams for the county and also, investment issues for the pension plans.
Correct. And when he was here last time, we talked about the way we are doing it currently isn't acceptable for the way we do the reporting. So we are going to be switching that. And then we discussed, well, if you switch that for reporting, we should probably also look at that for funding. Mm-hmm. So I do have him they do a report in January, looking at both types of funding methods as to which one should we be using, the both kinds for funding and also our reporting methods.
Good.
So that is coming, and that should be in our first meeting in 2015.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sure.
Will they be visiting at any time, or are they
I don't, they don't visit too much. It's a lot of teleconference. They're out of Tampa. But I would have him here at the meeting when we discuss that. Okay. Any other additional business?
I have one question.
Sure.
Does Wilmington Trust actually hold the securities? Is that, how does that work now?
So
I'm just curious.
We've been in conversation with Wilmington Trust. So they are different, and both of our plans, our OPEB fund, there are our custodian, and then in our pension fund, there are trustee. Okay, so we are working with Wilmington Trust. I'm getting some documentation to change them so that they're a custodian of both of our funds. We don't see there's a need for them to be a trustee. It is cheaper for them to be a custodian, and we would like to be moving to that direction. It's probably when we developed the OPEB fund, that was an option. Maybe when we did the pension fund, since that's a lot older, that, that was that option at that point. So we are working on making them a custodian of both.
Yeah. Just to give you, if I, may I just a little clarify? Sure. They're charging you 7 basis points as on the pension fund and 4 on the OPEB fund. And I don't even think there's a break point on the OPEB. I don't.
There's not. It's flat.
Okay. With Caroline County, who's a client of ours, they are 4 basis points on across the board, and they have a break point at $25 million, and they aggregate both plans together to get to that break point. So you've got a pretty good stick to hit them with. To I think they do a nice job, but it's time for their fees to come down. So.
And I'm in discussion with them.
Are they with another bank?
Wilmington Trust. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why Gina and I had that conversation, and I said, by the way.
Very good.
Okay. Any other additional business? Okay. I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Mr. Leahy, second?
Second.
Second by Mr. James. Take a vote, Mr. James.
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
I vote yes. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.